All right, welcome everyone. I'm Benjamin Nyland from ShareGate, and this is Christian?
Hey, this is Christian Buckley from BZ. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer. Really happy to be here, Ben. Just hang
perhaps
on just a second.
Too many monsters. All right, so what do we want to talk about this time?
Well, you're not going to leave that as the actual introduction, are you?
Oh, yeah, of course. All right. We wanted to talk about things you got to worry about when you're moving to Office 365, more on not necessarily the migration itself, but more once you know, you're going to Office 365, it's very different than, say, SharePoint on-premises or file shares, right? So you got to think about different things.
Yeah, definitely. I think as organizations start thinking about that, I mean, there's a lot of things that are in transition there. That usually it's coming with this whole idea of moving to cloud. So it's not just about SharePoint. There's all these other components that your organization is probably just now starting to think about. Or you know what? Actually, you could have moved and been thinking about SharePoint, talking about SharePoint, as a secondary activity, having already moved to Office 365 because of email, which is actually the number one reason why people have adopted in the past Office 365. Yep. Although, of course, SharePoint in the cloud is gaining momentum and having a lot of success there, and of course.
But historically, it's been Exchange, right. It's been the emails, of course.
Which is a key thing to think about, of like those differences, you know, things to think about. And so we wanted to kind of capture that. You know, what are the things to, I don't know how to say this.
Things to think about. So we were talking about things to think about going to Office 365 but not moving, so we're going to do some checklist.
And mostly SharePoint stuff. There's other things to think about, so I mean, of course. But I think that goes to kind of the point that it's that because Office 365, it's not just SharePoint. There are, you know, the other workloads. Now, I just want to be careful that when people talk about Office 365, they're often just talking about the individual workloads. But you do need to think about it as a whole. And there are increasingly capabilities that are being added to the platform that are looking across those workloads, across the various services within Office 365. And so you'll actually see a lot of the changes that are happening in reporting and dashboarding are looking across those services. So while, you know, I don't want to get into right this second any of those things, but if you think of like DLP, data loss prevention, is just one of those security services, one of those capabilities while you have DLP capabilities inside of Exchange and then outside of Exchange.
For SharePoint.
Same name. They do different things, so they work in different ways. So that's just the type of thing that you need to think about. Microsoft is thinking more about the end-to-end management experience.
We're seeing that with, if you're on Office 65 or going to Office 65, you know about groups, right? So, and that's one example of blurring those lines of, you know, people don't work with just one necessary product and then the other one. The marketing team works with Outlook, Exchange, SharePoint, and these other things. So when you're talking about DLP and securing your content, you want to be able to look across all of that together, right? You want to be able to run those security reports and see if something's been accessed, whether it was in the whatever planner and SharePoint team side and so on.
Well, you think about that too from an auditing perspective. So the auditors, depending on the compliance and the regulatory requirements that your company needs to meet, it doesn't care that the content is in your Exchange or in SharePoint or in OneDrive for Business or with shared via a Skype session. It just wants to have insight, wants to see where that happened, where that sensitive information or topic was discussed. And so increasingly, and I'll say that, it's not all there today. Right now it's still very workload specific, but increasingly you're going to be able to see like e-discovery and you know, some of these auditing capabilities across all of those workloads. So thinking of things to think about. I don't know, we just covered a lot. I don't know how you encapsulate that.
What should we go on by? You're going to Office 365 and there's, you know, some basics that you should know about, you know, managing your, let's say your SharePoint that may be different when you're going to Office 365. If we start with the basics, say, you know, you have sites with SharePoint and things that you should be thinking about. Of course, I think some of the basics would be making sure that you don't have too many sub-sites, right? So, well, this is very, very, too many sub-sites. Yeah. Essentially, you're creating site collections, right? And you have to know that, you know, somebody told me a good tip a couple of years ago now. I don't even remember who it was, so sorry, don't know who to give the credit for. But he said, Ben, if you're unsure, create a site collection. If you're wondering whether you should be creating a sub-site or a new site collection, you might as well create a site collection because you have less to lose in the long run, right? Because if you're a sub-site, you depend on the features. So you want to be able to see in your organization and maybe as part of your governance plan even, to make sure that if there are sub-sites being created, how many should be in there? Are there too many? When is too many? Should they be at the flat, you know, right under the root of the site collection, or should you be able to go under even further than that? So I'd say that's one of the things to think about when moving to Office 365, that it's okay to have a lot of site collections, but it's not okay to have a lot of sub-sites. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
All right, I guess that would be one thing.
But that's one of those things that I think you organically, I think most organizations run into, that you find that there's constantly cleanup. That's actually a great reason why you should have a lightweight tool to allow you to clean up and move some of those things. I wasn't trying to do a plug here.
I don't know what tool we'd use for that.
But as far as a cleanup process, it's critical because of that. It's just organically, as organizations go and they collaborate. Hey, we have the same thing on the social collaboration side of things, where communities are created. Communities have a life cycle where sometimes it's relevant, they're there for long periods of time, other times just like sites. And other sites, it's very short term. And you want to make sure that you have a process in place.
Of course.
A life cycle for
those things. That's where the governance plan comes in, right?
Correct.
You need to have the, and a lot of the time, there you go, have a governance plan. There you go. The governance plan, a lot of times what I've seen is you can go online and you can get the Microsoft governance plan PDF, which I encourage you to do not go get. Nothing against Microsoft, but that is not the worst, but it's a bad governance.
There's a lot of examples
like
out there, though.
It's like a 500 PDF. Nobody's, if you're not going to read your own governance plan, nobody else will. And that's what I did. My first governance plan was the Microsoft template in 2007. And I wasted 2 weeks, I think there's
a lot of great examples that are out there. There are plenty of consultancies that have developed much better plans for that and guidance around that. The thing that you need to think about, and actually, my preference is to go and build a governance site, not to have a plan.
That's exactly what I was going to recommend.
But is that it is a living, breathing activity?
Yes, it's ongoing.
If you think your governance plan is a document that's in a PDF form and we've sent it out and people have signed off on it, you failed, because that's not what it is. As soon as you sign it, as soon as you PDF it, it's already changed. It's evolved.
Exactly. And the thing we do when we see our customers is we do a wiki site, right? Because it's easy to create pages quickly on the go, and the rules go as you learn, right? So as you start using SharePoint as your Office 365 OneDrive for Business, you start to learn some of the things that are bad, some of the things that are good. For example, your libraries don't have versioning on, and you need to get back a document version from yesterday, right? It's not deleted, it's still there. What do? You didn't have versioning turned on, right? So then you adapt your governance wiki to make sure that all of these rules, all the things you learn as you go, things that you need to manage your environment, you gather them in that governance organic wiki. And though it may not be super strong the day of go live of the SharePoint Office 365 in this case, right, it'd still be useful in the long run.
And the other thing that I think is useful is understanding for those site designs, and it should be part of your governance plan, but is understanding the templates that you have in place and going and recreating those things. Now, this certainly, there's some things that could be migrated across from your old environment, but that's just something that you need to specifically go take a look at and say, look, if we've standardized on, or maybe it's a time to clean up and standardize the template. So I'd say it's to think about.
We should add standardize. Yeah. And how would I say this? I guess standardize lists and libraries, standardize sites as well, right? So if you're gonna set up lists and libraries, especially document libraries where your content's gonna go, right? What are the rules? When do you have versioning turned on? When do you have versioning turned off? When do you have content approval? When do you set a maximum number of versions? So it's important to, you don't have to go and say, oh, you created a site, you are in marketing, this is the sub, like, you can stay broad, but you gotta have some guidance and then check often to make sure that people didn't go and forget to turn it on or just turn it off because they wanted to.
Right.
So we got sites, standardized sites, lists, and libraries.
Thinking again, what else is critical for Office 365? One of the other things, I'm going back to, again, within the governance plan, is around compliance and auditing. And so understanding what those auditing standards are. So critical is, and I'll write it while we can talk about this, but is ensuring that what you have in place on-prem is possible online. Some of the standards changes, there's not, and I'll just, let's be honest here, there's not parity 100% in all factors of what's moved across. So you just need to make sure that if you've built out your compliance and auditing standards and capabilities around what SharePoint can do on-prem, that you are able to duplicate that for online. And if it's different, how you manage that, how you update that, how you run those reports, what reports are available, all of those things, make sure you understand what is possible out in 365.
Absolutely. The one I was thinking about as well is, who are your administrators in your Office 365? Because now you've got different workloads, right? You've got administrators for your emails, you've got for Exchange, you've got administrators for SharePoint, but SharePoint kind of like, you know, you've got site collection administrators, you've got the site owners, and then where I would like to separate is a OneDrive for Business as well, the personal space of people, if you want, the new My Documents version 3.0, whatever we want to call. So who is administrator? And dare I say, put yourself or the Office 365 admin, an administrator of the OneDrive for Business being created, right? And I think Jack Fruh from Chicago, and shout out to Jack Fruh, but he has some great blog posts with, and one of those tips was that again is, you want to be able to be an admin of the OneDrive for Business sites that are created, because a lot of the things that you want to be able to do for that user when they call, right? If they need something changed on their OneDrive for Business, or recuperate some file or a subsite they created for themselves, though we don't encourage that, of course, is who are the administrators for your SharePoint sites, and who are the administrators for your OneDrive for Business, and are you able to report and bulk manage them? Because people leave organizations,
right?
So what are you going to do for that OneDrive for Business?
And realistically, and this is something, a change that actually happened this last fall, was the ability to go and the ability in Office 365 to assign workload specific admins. That's a newer feature, but it's specifically to this need, is that generally the person who historically has managed email is not your SharePoint admin. A smaller organization, it might be the same person, same IT team doing those things. But in larger organizations, you know, that's not the case.
Absolutely.
And so being able to, treating OneDrive for Business the same way, it may have different policies, different standards in place. It might be your SharePoint person, but you have the ability to go in and set up those roles, set up those admins and users. So it is, I think, knowing your admins, who they are,
and what you should administrate, if that's
their roles and responsibilities.
All right, exactly. Roles and responsibilities. It's actually
your admins.
At the beginning of my governance plan, a lot of the time I'd set up the roles and responsibilities. Sometimes it's just IT, but sometimes it goes all the way into, you know, people in the business, right? The power users, what do they take care of? I'd like to also set, you know, when can you call for support? Right? What did you write again?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to how many times I did it. I just, you know.
So you definitely want to do that, and the support, right? I think historically, from what I've seen on our customers, one of the biggest pain points was, when do I call support, and who, you know, what do I call for what support?
Yeah.
So it's important to have some sort of it can be an easy diagram, it could be a complicated diagram, whatever fits what you need. But if a user is stuck, usually I'm a very, very hard admin. It's not, I'm not lenient in that way. I usually have a lot of training, right, that we provide, whether it's going to be video training and online training, so they understand what they have. My rule is, if you didn't follow the training, all right, and we make people register and confirm that they viewed the training, you cannot contact the support with it. You can only see, say, a power user person, or you can actually go and do the training. That would actually be helpful. Right. So the training is definitely a big part as well of know your support model.
Yeah, I think it all falls within that.
Absolutely.
I mean, the one thing that I would put that you touched on there, and that you know I'm very big on the topic of change management as well. So with all these things and making the transition like this, like, what is your process under which all of these things would be discussed, that you are on a regular time frame iterating on? So what is that, you know, change model for all these things? How often are we reviewing it? Now, I mean, my experience that the governance body was that change management body as well. So it wasn't just the standard governance, compliance, auditing, security, those topics all rolled under that governance body. It was a change management body, because we looked at the policies, we looked at all of these things, as well as the support model. We also looked at, you know, are we efficient efficient and effective in the UI itself? Do we need to make changes so that it, where we're adding capability, other integrations that we're doing, all those kinds of things?
Branding. You know, it's interesting. I saw on Facebook somewhere, someone from Microsoft posted something about master pages, right? So we're touching branding in Office 365 and just SharePoint in general. And basically, not making fun. I wouldn't say making fun. I would more say, basically, our new rule: do not create master pages. What are master pages? If you're not comfortable with that terminology, master pages is when designers, my English is leaving. It must be that poutine. Essentially, it's
this is
mostly,
This is a post poutine video here.
Video, so. Absolutely. Check it out, Google Images, poutine. So essentially, in terms of branding, historically, with SharePoint 2007, 2010, even 2013, let's be honest, we create a master page. The master page would say, you know, the navigation goes there and I made it blue. Or images, the logo of the company goes on the top left. And you kind of do your design, right? Yeah. And a lot of people, that's very important because they have an intranet. They want it to look at a very different way than SharePoint out of the box. And for a long time, it was fine, and that's what we did. And now they're saying, no, do not do a master page. What you need to do is actually use just client-side rendering, which, you know, technical way to just say, don't use a master page, use JavaScript, use everything that we give that's available on the client side because they're on the server side. So if you're going to Office 365, thing that you should know about, stop using master pages and start looking at different ways of branding. So,
yep. And of course, I would have to throw in there, coming from a company that provides some additional capabilities on top of this, if you think about some of the social experiences, you know, social collaboration experiences, I mean, there's other ways besides the master page is the wrong way to do this, but there are third-party solutions that are out there. I know it's not a top 10 list. I don't know if you have two more things. Top eight things. But things to think about. Obviously, it's not all conclusive. There are many other things. Oh, you have a ninth.
I have a ninth.
Oh,
okay.
External users.
So, I mean, I've told this story a couple of times before, but there's a big story here at ShareGate that, you know, happened to us. Opened up a team site. It's our own team site, actually. We've been working in there for quite some time. And then at some point, we're like, oh, it'd be great. Now this Office 5 has external users. We're going to share one document, right? One document, we're going to share it with two external users, make it easier, you know, remove the back and forth by email and, you know, which version was that? Was it modified while we sent it? And so it was great. And the feature still is great, right? External users. What we didn't realize is that somebody else in this site who had no idea that we had invited these external users to make his or her life easier, went into the members group and added something called everyone. He said everyone is in a members group because the thinking, especially when you're going from SharePoint on-premises and there's no external users and you're switching to Office 5.
Everybody who should be in the system should be okay because they're already in Active Directory. So
exactly.
They're already in the system, right?
So what happened, obviously, is all of a sudden we were running reports that we run with ShareGate and we saw that there was tons and tons of documents that were shared with external users, those two external users.
Yeah.
But we had not realized. We didn't even know when this happened. It probably was as soon as we added the users into external sharing. So definitely external users, external sharing, something you definitely want to check. Oh, looks like we've got a 10.
And we have our 10. So understand the modalities. Here.
Oh, that word is beyond my understanding of the English
collaboration.
Language. So what does that actually mean?
So just to wrap things up, and it kind of takes us back to the beginning and some of the differences. There are different, you need to understand inside your organization the different modes of collaboration. If you're thinking about, if you're at all thinking about, hey, we've had problems with adoption, the level of engagement, how much people are participating in the system, whether they're actually sharing and collaborating, why is one team so successful and others are just really struggling around that? And it could be because of these different modes or modalities of collaboration that they're used to. One team might be very email-centric. And so if you go and force them to use SharePoint, they're not going to collaborate. They're going to stick to that. And so you think of that, the various things that are out there. And I am very passionate about the social collaboration side, and that's what my company does.
Absolutely.
And so we build on top of SharePoint and extend social capabilities beyond what SharePoint and Office 365, even what Yammer can do, to build these other capabilities for those organizations that are very social collaboration minded.
Because different people worked it. I think Microsoft even realized it, because instead of saying, here's SharePoint, here's the only way you can work in Teams, now they're saying, look, you create a group of people, which they call Outlook groups sometimes, sometimes groups for Office 365, I'm still figuring it out, right? You keep this group, you put members in it, and it goes and it generates those different spaces. It'll create a video portal channel, create,
There's new things that are coming, new capabilities. But again, you'll have some teams that'll be that are comfortable with groups and with the Outlook centric, or even just staying inside of Outlook and not even using groups, but just the way that they've always done things.
Absolutely.
Others that are very process, or maybe they have, they've got workflows, they have line of business application integrations, they've built out and invested a lot of time and are comfortable working inside of SharePoint, while others want a very social, community-based experience. And so you need to, that's that last one. So understand where teams are comfortable in working, not dictate one way of doing things. Because Microsoft, it's not just right now, historically, they've always provided a couple different ways of doing the same thing so that you just have the right tools.
Yeah.
I always like to think of it as like, I'm learning karate. I know 100 ways to kill a man. I only need one. I know.
Yeah. So let's recap here. We got things to think about when moving to Office 5, things you got to manage, things you got to check for. Make sure that you don't have too many subsites. A lot of site collections is good, too many subsites is not good.
Have a plan in place, a governance plan, and we both recommend make it a site rather than a document so that you are constantly iterating on that.
What is it, quickly, when I try to explain governance plan quickly, I say more rules and policies, but I like to say more guidelines. Guide people to use it.
It's guidelines. Guidelines, best practices, point them towards the information that they need. Like, here are the templates that are being used.
Absolutely.
Here's what's done elsewhere.
Standardized sites, lists, and libraries. This is more on your space.
Yeah, this is one of the, I think just like this, is that to, as much as possible, and coming from an admin background as well, being able to go in and get your arms around what's happening within your site, if you can, again, provide the guidance, the guidelines around that, but not dictate that if somebody
Absolutely.
Has a specific need.
Compliance auditing changes versus on-prem.
Yeah, so being able to make that move over and understand the differences between the environments.
Know your admins, the roles, responsibilities, CCs. Definitely, so
that's
talking about...
That's the plural.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you have different admins now. You're in Office 65, you've got SharePoint, you've got the Yammer, you've got OneDrive for Business, and different people will take care of it differently, also have very different needs.
Yep. Knowing the support model, so being able to and iterate on that, but knowing where to point people to, where do they go? Where do they go internally? If you have external users, what is that model as well? So you know where to send people. People, as they're coming on, they know how to self-help themselves, go get those training modules, find the videos where you've walked through, but know when they need to raise an issue with the IT team.
Know your change management model. Is that the right one?
And so, similar to that. It's like, what is the iteration process that you have as an organization looking at all of these things?
Do not create master pages. I'll be watching you. I know you've seen this video. Do not create master pages. Now try to see the other ways of branding. There are tons of information out there. Some of them will tell you to create master pages. That is not the recommended way. Try to see the different ways now. Especially search-driven stuff. Check out display templates. Love those.
Your external users.
External users and externally shared content, right?
Yeah.
You may have one external user that you trust, but what has been shared to external users, you may not know what has been shared, like the example I was using earlier.
And then finally, understanding the modalities of collaboration and building so that it fits the need of the teams that are actually using the platform. Don't dictate. Guide, but let people collaborate in the way that's most comfortable to them.
And I guess that's our top 10 things to think about when going to Office 365.
There you go.
I'm Benjamin Nyland. We have Christian Buckley.
Thanks a lot for watching.